Welcome to episode 39 of A Legitimate Salvage, your episode-by-episode guide to the final season of The Expanse on Amazon Prime.
I'm Katie Burt.
I'm Chip Sutterth.
And I'm Warren Fry.
Jen Burt is on assignment. Welcome to our recap and review of Season 6, Episode 4, Redoubt, which is... I admit that I looked at a review today that had a little bit more than I wanted to know about the future of The Expanse in it, and the reviewer said, this is a show that really doesn't seem to be acting like or know that it's almost over. And here we are at episode 4, and I get the same kind of feeling, y'all.
I like how you phrased that. It was like, oh, poor show. Doesn't even know that it's
almost show. What have you done, show? Come on, show.
Okay, I admit it. I think that the show has achieved sentience. The show is proto-molecule.
Oh, we're screwed.
It's true.
Well, I mean, Jeff Bezos does own it, so it wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah, so I'm excited for us to get into the episode description and to talk about this thing, but it just feels kind of weird at this point. I was confident a couple of episodes ago that this thing was really moving into we're going to accelerate and we're going to finish big and we're going to have a story. And I'm not quite there anymore.
Although it makes me feel like the end of Battlestar Galactica, where they really ramp it up until the very last episode. It's like three or four
episodes. Bite your tongue, Warren.
What's that? No, no, not that end of Battlestar Galactica, but the big battle, the good part of the end of Battlestar Galactica, where it just, it's insanely crazy battle, and then they just kind of ramp it down a little bit. I could see next episode being nuts, and then the one after that kind of being the whole let's tie everything together one.
I just wish I knew somebody who had journalistic screener access so I would know if we had like a double or triple length episode 6 coming.
Oh, good point.
That's a good question.
Yeah, if only we had somebody who could check on that for us.
I'll see what I can do.
Ask Spider-Man what Peter Parker has to say about this.
Yeah.
Oh, so let's, we've been faffing about long enough. Warren, why don't you take us through the recap and then let's talk about Redoubt.
Okay. On Ceres, the Belters are pissed about the explosion, and even though it was set by Marco Anaros, Christian Avasarala knows they won't believe it. MCRN Admiral Carino suggests an attack on Medina Station, then plans to go it alone when Christian declines. Meanwhile, Monica Stewart continues documenting the cost of the war, even the bits that Christian thinks make Earth and Mars look weak. Clarissa discovers in the ship's log that Holden disarmed the torpedo, leading to several tough conversations. Bottom line, Holden's making gut choices to protect Naomi and to avoid being the man who killed her son, and neither Amos nor Naomi are down with that. Portrait and managerial excellence Marco Anaros blames everyone but himself for losing the skirmish with the Rossi, spacing two senior officers and busting Philip to repair tech. He takes another body blow when Kamina's pirate band successfully raids Marco Anaros' supply depot, albeit at the cost of Joseph's arm during an ambush. Kamina calls Marco out in a wideband transmission as a coward and hoarder who will, quote, live shamed and die empty, unquote. This pisses Philip off, who rallies the others in lower decks to Marco's cause. Finally, on Laconia, there is a visit for Zan's family, after it's revealed he died in a car accident. Kara talks to Admiral Duarte, previously name-checked as an MCRN officer who could spar with Marco. He is pulled away from their conversation by Cortazar, who announces a breakthrough on Laconia Station. Later that night, Kara wheels her brother's body away into the woods, we assume believing that the planet can fix him too.
And that's Season 6, Episode 4, Redoubt. And wow, so much that happened there, and I'm not sure exactly where to start.
How about Laconia?
Maybe Laconia, yeah, because, you know...
Because that's where The Expanse starts.
that is where it starts, and we're introduced to Admiral Duarte, mm-hmm. And he's been name-checked a couple of times, and the internet tells us that he's actually a really big deal.
Mm-hmm. But how big a deal can he be for us, the TV watching ignoramuses, with two more episodes?
So, based on the fact that we can assume that he's a big deal, but we don't, as ignoramuses, we don't know that entirely just yet. What do we think about this character's introduction? That was a really serious and soulful conversation with this little mm-hmm. girl that he doesn't know.
Yeah, it seemed a little out of nowhere because we don't know anything about this guy. It's like, just you just show up at a wake and then give this girl advice, which was good advice, I guess. But it just seemed like, who is this guy and why is he talking to this kid? Also, I'm suspicious of men talking to children. Stop doing that.
It was very good advice. And I think I would like to rewatch it and see how they shot it. I think a lot of it was in the performance because there is a creepiness to it, mm-hmm. which I don't think is, inherent in...
No, I hope not.
In the text of the conversation. It's actually a really beautiful conversation. And if I didn't know, have this vague idea that he's not going to be great news, I wouldn't... Yeah, I would... I don't know. I think I'd feel differently about him after watching this. I also liked how he, what he was sharing kind of connected back to, I can't remember if it was last season or the season before, where Bobby is on Mars mm-hmm. and really exploring, the dream of Mars and maybe the death of the dream of Mars. And to have that theme picked back up in this conversation, was really interesting and also just really tied this world, this actual world, this setting to a lot of what is going on in the rest of, or a lot of what I understand is going on in the rest of the universe in the show.
Yeah. So if Duarte's a future antagonist, and he, we do know that he was working with Marco Inaros, mm-hmm. when the previous admiral out the ring, when they made the deal, give us Laconia, we'll help you take Medina Station or whatever exactly that deal was. They said, they told Inaros, Admiral Duarte gives his regards. Then they got gobbled up by weird red lights and things like that.
Possibly protomolecule? Anyway, who knows?
Yeah. But anyway, where I'm going with all of this is that if this guy and Marco Inaros are supposedly on similar levels, this guy has some measure of emotional intelligence.
True.
And wits about him, which is a very interesting contrast between the manager of the year.
Yes.
It's the scariest kind of antagonist, I think. And it's also interesting to see him paired with Cortazar, our old friend Cortazar, who canonically had his empathy turned off.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, I forgot about that.
Whatever. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting that you bring that up, Chip. But I do think that is one of the more chilling kinds of villains, I guess, or antagonists. Someone who has the ability to understand others' emotions and maybe even to empathize with them to a certain extent, but chooses to use that in horrifying ways. And again, I don't know what this dude's going to do, but it doesn't seem like it's heading in a good direction based on general internet vibes.
Yeah, general internet vibes. We don't know that he's a villain. We just know that he's working with Inaros.
Laconia just, which makes him villain adjacent, but Laconia just baffles me because they never really say what this planet is actually for. It's a big deal, but we don't know why. Mm. Also, this occurred to me yesterday. I was thinking, everybody just seems kind of cool with the fact there's a bunch of alien life forms around. Nobody has actually ever seen alien life forms before this, but they're just like, oh yeah, it's a salamander and with probably different DNA than anything we've ever seen. Whatever. Don't let it eat birds. They just kind of brush it off. And I'm like, I think I would be freaking out a little bit, or at least a little more cautious around these animals, which are suspiciously Earth-like.
Did we ever see any life forms on Illus?
I don't think so. No, it was just the protomolecule sort of AI type stuff flying around.
Yeah.
I do wonder if one of the last two episodes will have more of a Laconia focus. If the final episode was just about Laconia.
It really has to.
Yeah, that'd be a bold decision not having, unless our characters somehow end up there, which I don't see happening, but who knows?
The space station, is that built off protomolecule or not? I've got that in my head that that's the case, but maybe that's not the case. Or are they just building a space station on in orbit? Because it seems like a big deal.
I assume we'll find out more, but that's my guess. Mm-hmm. It's got at least something to do with the protomolecule that the Mars folks got their hands on.
Mm-hmm. I hope all you book readers are enjoying this.
Yeah.
Look at these flailing idiots.
Yeah. Well, as long as we're Marco adjacent here, let's check in with him, because goodness gracious.
He's even more yassified. I didn't think it was possible, but he is incredibly sculpted. Like, it's just getting ridiculous. How is he doing this? When does he have time to run anything with all the endless beauty rate routine he must be going through? It's just silly.
I think he looks like a Disney prince.
He really does. He really does.
No one plots like Marco. No one takes cheap shots like Marco.
I'm just wondering, is it because I noticed it that I'm noticing it more, or are they actually making it worse each time? I can't tell.
Yeah, so let's see here. He's gotten kind of humiliated by the Rossi crew. He loses control and he dumps senior crew people out in space. Rosenfeld challenges him, and he bristles at it, but he accepts it. But then he just gets humiliated by Drummer.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like he's the kind of cartoon villain at this point that, I mean, is he becoming Wile E. Coyote super genius?
No, I have some respect for Wile E. Coyote. I don't have any respect for Marco Naros.
It is. I think maybe his character is one of the, it seems like one of the sacrifices of the shortened season in some ways. Mm-hmm. I read a review prior to the season premiere that I think was based on maybe all the episodes, but at least like a good chunk of them. And they were saying that because it's shorter, it seemed like Marco feels like more of a mm-hmm. black and white villain, and Christian feels more like a black and white hero than both, like, than either of them have in the past. And having now watched four of the episodes, I would agree with that.
Yeah, I'm seeing some of that as well. So here's my prediction as someone who has not read the books. I mean, we're watching Philip flailing a lot in this episode. In the end, though, he comes around to Marco's side for whatever reason. He can't stand to see his father denigrated because that affects his self-esteem or whatever. So my prediction is that this is actually sort of the rise of Philip as a leader of the Free Navy or of the OPA at Marco's expense. You know, maybe Marco is destined for a fall, and Philip is tragically going to rise in his place.
Although he's even less of a managerial expert than his dad is. Also, I found it kind of depressing because I could see that definitely being the path, but also he was kind of doing well as a junior tech guy. He was getting along with everybody. He was getting work done. I was kind of like, yeah, he's doing all right in this new position he doesn't want.
Well, it's such a kinder world, yeah. And the guy he got paired with was so nice. Mm-hmm. it's really sad to watch. It continues to be very sad to watch his storyline. I think the actor is doing a really good job. I couldn't help but think of the SNL parody of Kylo Ren on Undercover Boss in this episode. He just reminded me so much of Kylo Ren. I think he's so much more sympathetic than Kylo Ren and much more nuanced for lots of reasons. But, to see him continue to make the choice to fall back into this world of, you know, abuse and power and violence is sad, but also realistic.
Yeah, not surprising. Like, what else has he got to work off of other than his mother, who's, from his point of view, left him twice now?
Right. And we can't forget that in the previous episode, he literally fired the shots to try to kill his mom.
Mm-hmm.
So speaking of that battle, we called it. We knew that Holden's decision to disarm the torpedo that could have blown Marco and Philip up, that wasn't just going to be tossed aside as an accident. Mm-hmm. And it turns out Clarissa going through the ship's logs finds it out, and Amos does not react well.
No.
Or maybe he does. Maybe he reacts entirely rationally
given
the situation.
He reacts Amos is what he reacts.
Yeah, the Tao of Amos.
Calm, but also very furious.
Yeah, so those confrontations were really interesting. You know, Holden had to face Amos, and then Naomi, and then Clarissa, interestingly enough. It's an interesting sequence there. I had a moment in the previous episode when Holden disarmed the missile. I was like, are they going to explain why he did it? Does he know why he did it? And Amos lampshades it. I don't know what you're mad about, that I'm challenging you, or you don't know why you did this. Mm-hmm. Now, ordinarily, I'm not a big fan of characters not knowing their own motivations, but does this work for you?
I mean, he basically does explain to Naomi why he thinks he did it, so that he wouldn't kill Philip, but and then she calls him on it, which is great.
Yeah, I loved all these scenes, but I do think they maybe would have benefited from a little bit more space, like in a longer season, because it does feel like he goes from not knowing to knowing very quickly in a way that makes it seem like he did know and he just didn't want to tell Amos, which I don't think was the intention of that scene. Yeah, but I love all these character moments on the Rossi so much. Last episode, I said I didn't want them to linger too long on this, but I'm actually really glad they did because it was... Yeah, it led to some of my favorite conversations in the season so far, especially the one with Naomi. And I really like the one with Clarissa, too, which I was surprised by because she continues to be one of the weakest characters in this season for me.
Also, I liked the conversation with Amos and Holden because it was in space. Frankly, I'm that easy.
I know.
It's like, ooh, they're talking in space.
When it started happening, I was watching with Jen, and I turned to them and was like, I can't believe he's doing this in space. And Jen was like, of course he is.
It's a really awkward time to do anything, let alone a heart-to-heart.
Yeah.
Which is exactly why Amos
that. Context, sir. Context.
Yeah. And then the conversation between Naomi and Jim, that is a couple of times Jim's almost shouting at Naomi that you can't deny how this is affecting you. You can't deny how this is hurting you. And she's not, you know, I think he is just the master of projection, during that whole scene.
Yeah.
Naomi knows exactly how awful this is, but she makes the point that she has been making choices. And while I would agree with Holden that, you know, it's not her, you know, Marco's blood would not be on her hands because Holden failed to do it. That's still, you know, Holden did that failure because of his feelings for her. And that's a really complicated, awful place to be.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever seen a conversation like this one before. And that's a rare and wonderful experience watching TV, I think. It was just so based in who both these characters are and the journeys that we've seen both of them go on. And I could just understand exactly where both of them were coming from and thought they were both, you know, right. Yeah, I don't know. I think I need to rewatch it a few times.
Yeah, I think I do
honestly.
Too. I've only seen it once.
Did it make you more skeptical about the trajectory of their relationship?
No.
two episodes left thing hangs over everything. Like, it really does.
The two things that really stood out to me were Holden saying, you know, it would change our relationship if I was the one who killed your son. And also Naomi, you know, asking Holden to respect the choices that she's made in relation to her son. I don't know. It's so good because I think it's like so realistic that both of these things are probably true, or maybe Holden is projecting to a certain extent, but he also maybe couldn't live with that. Mm-hmm. Or he couldn't be the person. He couldn't be with Naomi knowing that he caused her that pain, or he led to something that caused her that mm-hmm. pain, or had such a, yeah.
Also, how many people get shoved into this position in the first place? Not too many, you know?
Yeah, you know, highly relatable situation.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's a big universe out there, but we only have a few people who run into each other in it.
Unlike Star Wars, they're not related most of the time, except for, I guess, Philip and Naomi.
Right. You know, how did that Clarissa, that final conversation with Clarissa go? You know, I still, she still feels too perfectly packaged.
Mm. Yeah, she does a little bit.
Yeah, I think... I mean, I just love the line, don't ever feel bad about not killing someone.
True. That's a good line.
And I do think that was something that Holden had to hear. But it did feel, like, it doesn't usually feel like you can see the strings on this show, or people are delivering, even when people say things that are very thematically driven or beautiful lines or very poetic or really hitting home in some way, they feel based in character and they feel like something someone would actually say. And... it felt less like that with her because she's just a less developed character, I think. Or maybe, I don't know, maybe the actress can't deliver it as well, or that nuance as well. Probably a combination of both.
How many people has she killed? Like, quite a few, right?
I mean, I just remember that guy that she, like...
Yeah, like, it just, you know. It reminds me of every video game character's problem. You're supposed to be really sympathetic, but every video game character is a mass murderer. So how sympathetic can you be?
Yeah.
Like, so it's kind of the same with her.
She does recognize that.
Yeah. She recognizes it, but it's not, you know, she's... It's kind of the same problem where you're like, well, this character is supposed to be deep, but also they've murdered a pile of people and don't seem to care all that much,
yeah.
You know? So, or can't.
And I guess that's not really clear what, it isn't clear what her motivation is there. Mm-hmm. Because, yeah, I don't know her character well enough. You know, when Amos confronts Holden, you can tell he's just so angry because Holden is one of the people he's chosen to be his moral compass. Mm-hmm. And he's so frustrated that he might have to find, like, a new person for the job or a few new people for the job. We understand his character so well. We know why he's upset there. But
has he gotten
to
the point where he really needs one? He let go of Naomi as a moral compass because mm-hmm. he was so upset about the protomolecule to Fred Anderson thing. He hasn't really been clinging to Holden that much recently, not since Illus,
and he decided to bring Peaches on board, so maybe he's deciding things for himself now, you know.
I hope so. I feel like he's always been one of the more moral characters, and I think I'm sure there have been points where maybe in his character's history that maybe that hasn't been the case, but his fear of being a bad person has always seemed, I don't know, like bigger or than that possibility.
Because he has been one and not always by his own choice, right? So I think that's
And
part
I think
of it.
He's also seen so many people become mm-hmm. bad people or make bad choices.
Grew up around it.
That he knows how easily it can happen. Mm-hmm. So he's really afraid of that happening to him or happening to him again, maybe.
Yeah, I do feel like he's sort of coming into his own and you know, the Peaches project maybe, you know, him just doing the, trying to be that person for someone else.
Possibly, yeah. And she definitely does need it, so yeah.
There is absolutely that, but it sort of makes her, you know, an extension of him rather than a fully realized character herself. You know, we're being kind of critical about the show at this point, and I feel like it's mostly because of the truncated season.
Yeah, and I wonder,
I have to,
from a meta point of view, just like, was that the intention in the first place, 6 episodes, or did they just, could they just not do it because of COVID or contracts are up or whatever? Like, it seems like an outside force to do with the show had more to do with it than story, from what I can tell, the way they're putting things together. They may prove me wrong, but that's how it feels.
I don't know. I mean, there was another quote that I saw about this season, and I cannot remember the reviewer who said it, you know, who said that The Expanse has the opposite problem of Game of Thrones.
Hmm.
That Game of Thrones, they ran out of book, so they had to finish the story their own way.
And it shows.
And the Expanse is trying to find the stopping place when there are three books and years of storyline ahead.
It's like Dune.
Yeah.
The Expanse is so much better than Game of Thrones, though.
True.
Even before Game of Thrones ran out of book. I like Game of Thrones, but I just think this show is so well done. And even in this season, and in this episode where we are critical of certain elements, I still think it's one of the best shows on TV. Yeah. I mean, obviously, we have a podcast about it. We all love this show.
Clearly, yes.
Well, I think the best part of this episode, and I think it's almost entirely unimpeachable, is piracy.
True. Mm-hmm.
Drummer's just so cool. Every time she shows up, I'm just like, oh, she's so cool.
Yeah, I remember being vaguely irritated by her when she got introduced. And then as time went on, I'm like, she is possibly the coolest character in this whole show. Except for Avasarala, of course.
I think so. But it's not just her. Everybody in the Golden Bough subgroup has their moment to shine in this episode. This feels like a Belter family again. And, I mean... Yosip makes a sacrifice. I forget her name. The one who nearly got thrown off Kamina's ship.
I can't remember her name either. It's a Japanese
derivation. It's like Michio or
something.
Who froze during battle before, absolutely does not freeze as the emergency medical technician. The scene where she has to amputate Joseph's arm and does not hesitate, but does not hesitate to express her love for him and her apology for what she has to do. You know, the bedside, she is laser focused in this moment. She really comes into her own there.
Yeah. And it's not that just that she has this, you know, very practical, like, skill as a some sort of medic, but also just the empathy and caring that she's exhibited both in this episode and in the previous episode, where she was moved by Monica's, you know, depiction of Earth and the suffering that is happening there. And Drummer sees this, and she sees how valuable that empathy is and that... that caring is. I love that they found a way to include this as part of the final season.
Absolutely. These Belters demonstrate power. They're pirating up the place and finish it with wideband transmission of Kamina just...
Middle finger.
Yeah, just absolutely emasculating Marco across the solar system. Yosip, notwithstanding, it's the one unambiguous win of the entire episode. Mm-hmm. And I'm excited to see what happens next, because we don't really see Marco's reaction to what happens. I'm sure that's coming next time, but.
I like to see more just Belter reaction too. Drummer's such an interesting figure within the political landscape, and I mean we all think she's cool. I can't imagine anyone not thinking she's cool. So I want to know, you know, how that random tech guy that Philip was hanging out with feels about this. I mean, we got a little bit of his reaction.
What station was he in charge of? Was she in charge of the big Mormon ship? I don't remember.
Yep. Okay. Yep. Okay. She was in charge of Medina Station.
She wasn't in charge of Sirius or anything. Okay.
No. She
was like a co. She was higher up at Medina Station. Right. Yes. I believe.
Yes. Yeah. She was. She was the boss of Medina Station, and she walked away.
I'm just trying to figure out which places would be more amenable to her. From the start, because they have good memories of her.
Yeah.
Oh, she was the assistant director of Tycho Station as well. That's what I was thinking of.
Right, working for Fred.
When we first, got to know her.
Yeah, so we do know that the MCRN is planning to go after Medina Station with or without the UN's help. So we'll see what happens there.
I don't know about that.
With two episodes to go.
Oh dear.
So they're spending their time on character rather than lightning pacing through the plot. In the end, not knowing exactly where this thing's going to wind up 2 weeks from now, and not knowing whether they're ever going to return to this stuff on the screen. How do we feel about what we're getting? Are they doing the trade-offs that we would have preferred?
It's difficult to tell. I think they're going to bring us a whopper of some sort at the end of this thing, but I just can't tell how right now. But I would have said the same thing last season, too, so.
Yeah, they've built up so much goodwill that I trust them completely. I also prefer, I prioritize character stuff over plot, and everyone's different, so I don't think there's like a better story element, and ideally your story has all of them, but yeah, for me this is, I think this is exactly how I wanted this final season to play out, even if I didn't know it. So I'm really enjoying the, I guess, slower pace, because the emotions are so heightened and have been built over so long that I want to see how these characters, I want to know how these characters feel. I want to see their interactions with each other, especially on the Rossi. So yeah, I think I'm getting exactly what I want.
Okay, last word to you, Warren, before we pack it in for the week.
I think I'm getting a little too tied up in the fact that it's two episodes, which these people make television. They know what they're doing. We don't know yet. Maybe it'll be a two-hour or three-hour finale or something. I doubt it, but maybe it will be. Or maybe it'll be, there might be a way to tie this thing up that we don't know about, and we don't know what we don't know. So I'm hoping for the best. Let me put it that way. And I don't think, and unlike fourth season where I was like interested but not as interested as before or after, here I'm still just as interested as I was for season 5, so and I only really have two more to wait, so I'm gonna find out one way or the other. But anyway, the true last word goes to you, Chip.
Well, you know, I'm just sort of waiting. I'm not quite as absolute faith as you are, Katie, about how this is all going to wrap up. And I think in retrospect, I was more positive on season 4 than you two and Jen were. Mm. Just because you have pacing, you have a mystery, it's a relatively contained story. You know, you're either on Illus or you're on Mars, and you know, stuff is happening there. And We had multiple threads, so many threads that we were dealing with in this one episode alone. I'm still sort of hoping that they all get resolved in a way that is satisfying, but leaves the possibility for more storytelling to come. Mm-hmm. So just slightly at the edge of my seat, hoping that your faith is rewarded, Katie.
Me too.
So let's find out what happens next time. You know, please thank you for listening to us or ramble on, and please follow us at Legit Salvage on Twitter and find us on the Incomparable Network. We'll be back soon to discuss season 6, episode 5, the penultimate one, Why We Fight. Until then,
live shamed and die empty.